Hello, and welcome to Sentencing Practice Talk, a podcast for federal sentencing practitioners presented by the U.S. Sentencing Commission. You're listening to a special mini-series on the guideline amendments effective November 1st, 2025, and will appear in the 2025 Guidelines Manual. In this episode, my colleagues Lori Baker and Ross Thomas cover the forthcoming amendment relating to supervised release. Subsequent episodes in this series will cover the amendments relating to circuit conflicts, simplification, drug offenses, and firearms. You can listen to all the episodes in this series on iTunes and Spotify, and be sure to check out our Amendments in Brief Explainer series on our website, which covers these topics as well. Without further ado, here's Lori and Ross.
Hey, Ross.
Hey, Lori. How's it going?
It's going well. How about you?
Doing all right.
So it's come to that time of year again where we need to talk about amendments that are going to take effect in the fall.
Has it been a year since I've recorded my last podcast?
It has been. So I really feel like the biggest fundamental change for me was the supervised release amendment. Let's talk about that one first.
Yeah, it's one that doesn't get a lot of love. People don't think a lot about supervised release, and that's totally understandable, right? It is the portion of someone's sentence that follows a term of imprisonment. But usually at a sentencing, most people are focused on imprisonment, not what happens after. So at a sentencing, it doesn't get a hard look many times. And even at the Sentencing Commission, we haven't had very many amendments cycles that sort of focused on supervised release. So when I was talking about the commissioners taking a step back last amendment cycle, they said, hey, here's an area that we haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about. Why don't we bring in a group of experts, people that have been sentenced, former probation officers, academics, judges, and let's get them all in a room and talk about what's working for supervised release, what's not working, and what can we do from the Sentencing Commission's perspective to improve on this process. And I know you sat at the round table. You did a lot of work on supervised release.
I did. Can you kind of give us a summary of what we learned at that round table? What really drove the look at making this amendment?
So I think one of the things that emerged from there is that supervised release was often kind of imposed as an afterthought in many, many cases, even in cases where it wasn't statutorily required. And even though it probably wasn't beneficial, it wasn't beneficial to the person, it wasn't beneficial to the public and public safety, and we were spending a lot of resources. So what the commissioners were trying to home in on was trying to identify when is supervised release appropriate, who's it appropriate for, and what are the appropriate sort of conditions and length that are really going to promote sort of the statutory factor talking about rehabilitation and protection of the public. So the commission looked at sort of both the initial imposition. There are a bunch of changes in Chapter 5. They also looked at sort of the revocation side of things, as well as sort of early termination and modification. So both the beginning and sort of when it actually is running.
So what I hear you saying is that it seems like imposing a term of supervised release was a little bit more of a reflexive action at sentencing without so much individualized assessment into the importance of when it needs to be imposed, the length of the term, the conditions, all of that stuff. And that's a term that we heard a lot and we talk about a lot in connection with this amendment is that individualized assessment.
Absolutely. I heard the term individualized assessment, and for people who are looking at this, they're going to see this term individualized assessment over and over and over again. And I think a lot of people see this term, they're like, they have this like sort of panic attack. But really, all we mean by individualized assessment is applying sort of the statutory factors, all those relevant 3553A factors, and making sort of an individual determination, treating people as individuals and trying to figure out what is going to work best for them.
Right. So that kind of reminds me of the, you know, the statutory requirement of sufficient but not greater than necessary. That's the same individualized assessment kind of concept that we're carrying over into this portion of sentence imposition as well. And that individualized assessment, we're not asking you to do any additional kind of screening test, or there's no tool that you're going to use to make that assessment. It's just thinking broadly about those sentencing factors and making the proper decision.
Absolutely. It's not a PICRA. It's not formalized. It's just applying those statutory factors. And the way this sort of works in the amendment is that there are changes to whether a term of supervised release gets imposed, how long that term runs, and under what conditions. So you'll see individualized assessment in all three of those buckets. So what the change really does is sort of eliminate sort of these minimums and really focuses in on, instead of having sort of a default range with minimums and default sort of conditions and default imposition, is to kind of take a look at these. So instead of recommending a term of supervised release in all cases for which a term of imprisonment of over 1 year has been imposed, instead that requirement is eliminated and courts are instructed to make an individualized assessment. Instead of having minimum terms of supervised release based on the class of felony or misdemeanor, courts are now instructed to look at and make an individualized assessment. And for the conditions, it makes clear, and this has sort of always been the case, but makes clear that standard conditions are discretionary. Courts totally have the ability to omit or modify those standard conditions based on an individualized assessment, and not to sort of reflexively put them all down. So those are sort of the big kind of imposition kind of changes.
So we're in chapter 5 right now. We're talking about those upfront decisions that we're making in chapter 5.
Yes, we're talking about chapter 5. And there's actually another change in chapter 5.
Right.
Although this is really almost a back end change. And this talks about sort of modifications and early termination. I think one of the things that really came out through public comment and at the hearing is that early termination is statutorily available, but maybe underutilized. So what the commission has done is kind of put more concrete guidance and actually listed a bunch of factors that a court should consider in determining whether to end this term of supervised release early.
Okay.
So let's talk about the changes that are made in Chapter 7. We've talked about some things going on in Chapter 5 that are kind of the upfront approaches. In Chapter 7, which was always a series of policy statements regarding violations of probation and supervised release, one of the major changes is dividing up those two sections, probation and supervised release, making those completely separate parts of Chapter 7.
Absolutely. And I think the reason that these get split is that there are different statutory factors sort of animating, Probation is a sentence in and of itself. And as a sentence, courts are permitted to think about punishment, for the length of the term, the conditions that they impose. Supervised release works a little bit differently, Omitted from the statutory factors is this punishment rationale that the primary purpose is really, reintegration, rehabilitation. And for those reasons, it was really important to kind of split these into two different sections. So probation remains completely unchanged and supervised release now becomes its own world. And in Chapter 7, in this sort of split world, talking about supervised release, one of the really big changes that they make is to encourage flexibility again, encourage these sort of individualized assessments. So it encourages courts to take a second look at modifying conditions if a modification is appropriate, whether those become more onerous or less onerous. things change. And it highlights that courts have always had this statutory ability, but encourages them to exercise it. The other sort of change, and again, this goes to increasing flexibility, increasing the judge's discretion, making these individualized determinations, is that when someone violates a term of supervised release, one of those conditions, courts have a lot of options, right? It's not straight to revocation. They should consider alternative mechanisms when responding to them. And even if we do get to this revocation stage, courts are not sort of, instead of saying if there's a grade A or grade B violation, court shall revoke, the language is more flexible, right? Generally appropriate for grade A violations, often appropriate for grade B, and sometimes appropriate for grade C, and encouraging courts to, you know, again, treat people as individuals, right, determine whether their response is appropriate.
Right. So that individualized assessment theme again. So you talked about that second look. I think the idea there is somebody is coming out of serving a sentence of imprisonment that might have been a fairly lengthy term. And maybe the conditions that were imposed at the time of sentencing are no longer relevant. Maybe a lot of things happened during that term of incarceration and, you know, the educational goals or the treatment goals might be very different on the tail end. So take that second look, see if modification is needed. Again, that individualized assessment of what does that person need for rehabilitation now? And then when there is a violation, again, you know, really taking that broad look at what that person needs and individually determining the best course of action.
Absolutely. And I think to sort of conclude this amendment, I think a lot of people will look at it and feel a little bit overwhelmed because it's really lengthy, right? There are changes in Chapter 5 that we talked about. There are changes in Chapter 7. It seems like there's a whole new section on supervised release. But I actually don't think the changes are all that extreme. And one way to think about the changes is to put them in the context of, these were already statutory requirements, this individualized assessment, the lack of minimum terms in many cases. So it's really about getting back to the statutory intention and kind of following those rules. So hopefully they're not sort of dramatic changes in how people are approaching it. It's just making sure they realize the authority that's always been there is the authority that the courts are, that the commission is encouraging courts to exercise.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. It does seem like an overwhelming amendment, but it's really not. It really is just getting back to that individualized assessment that is necessary for rehabilitative purposes.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Sentencing Practice Talk. Be sure to subscribe if you haven't already to the podcast on iTunes or Spotify to stay up to date. If you'd like to review the amendments in brief, you can find them on our website, that's ussc.gov, in the Policymaking tab. Please be advised that the information provided by Commission staff is offered to assist in understanding and applying the sentencing guidelines. The information does not necessarily represent the official position of the Commission, should not be considered definitive, and is not binding upon the Commission, court, or the parties in any case. This episode was produced and published at taxpayer expense. That's all for now. Thanks for listening.